You're listening to photographer Joseph Parry on the Better Pixel Photography Podcast, hosted by Sharky James, second only to the Megalodon in the size of his personality.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 73. Warrants issued for three photographers. In this episode, fools at Yellowstone will have their day in court. Fujifilm is on the hunt for a leaker. What percentage of Americans think their photography is awesome? Listener Eric in Texas has a question for me. And a camera drone flies into a model's head. All that and more in episode 73 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Joseph, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Joseph Parry is a UK-based mixing and mastering engineer by day, and like us, loves photography and is quite good at it. He's an amazing portrait and fashion photographer with a wicked sense of humor, as you just heard. And I'd like for you to check out his work at josephparry.co.uk. That's Parry, spelled P-A-R-R-Y, by the way. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 73 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. The old motto of the Baltimore Grotto goes like this: take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints, kill nothing but time. But apparently not for the Canadian-based filmmakers and photographers from the group High on Life. This past weekend at Yellowstone National Park, four members of the group were recorded disturbing the delicate ecosystem that is the iconic Grand Prismatic Spring, and now they're facing the consequences of their foolish actions. Now, despite the four heads between them, this group apparently thought it was okay to ignore the signs that were posted that warned of the illegality of these actions. A man who wishes to remain anonymous shot photos and video of the group, and knowing the error of their ways, passed it along to officials from Yellowstone National Park. You know, people do these foolish things with the goal of either posting them online to get glory, or sell more t-shirts, or sell more whatever they're doing, and have images that others don't have. And just because you can, doesn't mean you should, of course. You know, there's a reason why people don't have these images, of course, and it's because you're not allowed off the path, that close to the spring, and disturbing everything. If everyone were allowed out there, there'd be nothing to see anymore. It would be destroyed. Now, members of this group posted their images online, and within no time, the identities of these men were known. People also immediately called for the group sponsors, including Red Bull, Bud Light, Blueprint, and Coco Pure, to pull support for them, and there's also a change.org petition to that effect. As of this recording, over 10,000 people have signed it, and obviously, they're none too happy. I think it's important to note that these weren't your average tourists who made an error in judgment, but a group whose purpose in part is to create photos and videos to further their efforts to sell clothing from their clothing line, get more followers, etc. On their official Facebook page, it says this, quote, "We travel around the world for a living and make fun and adventurous videos. We also have a clothing company," end quote. In fact, they make videos nearly on a daily basis, or were up until this, so they, of course, have an incentive to top themselves and build their audience. You know, it's part of their business model, it would seem. The group issued an apology on their Facebook page, but, well, that didn't exactly go over too well at all. The overwhelming response has been outrage. Almost no one is taking their side on this. After all, this group claims to love and respect nature, and yet their actions here prove otherwise. These guys are being seen as opportunists, and I don't disagree with that at all here. In their apology, they say, quote, "We got overzealous in our enthusiasm for this wonderful place. When standing at the face of such natural wonder, we were drawn to it. In an attempt to get the perfect shot, we acted in a way that doesn't reflect our respect for the environment we were trying to capture. We wandered off the laid out path and took photos of the Grand Prismatic Springs, unaware of the ecological ramifications and safety precautions. For this, we would like to sincerely apologize to the Yellowstone Park community and the public," end quote. Now, they go on to say that they'll donate $1 for every time someone uses hashtag donation for Yellowstone in a post on the park's Facebook page, up to $5,000, But people, of course, see this as being a lame attempt to make up for what they did. And in my opinion, it is. And if they have $5,000 to donate, these guys are making pretty good money what they're doing. Again, the need to constantly top themselves and get paid may have driven them to do this foolish thing, and now they're going to be paying the consequences. Personally, though, I don't buy it. You can't convince me that four people missed signs that warned them of going off the path. I mean, how likely is that, right? Well, according to the Bozeman Daily Chronicle in Montana, a criminal complaint has been filed and federal arrest warrants have been issued for three of the four members of this group for, quote, creating a hazardous or physically offensive condition at Grand Prismatic Spring in Yellowstone National Park, end quote. Now, in my personal opinion, these guys are going to be made an example of because they need to discourage other people from doing this. If they're allowed to get away with it, other people might test it as well. I think perhaps everyone can learn a lesson from this here. Don't mess with nature for your own agenda, especially when you're documenting your crimes. You would think that four heads were better than one, right? Nope, apparently not. Next. All right, here's a serious question. What do you think about your photography? It's pretty good, right? I mean, you've been practicing a lot and you're listening to this podcast and getting better. And you know what? If you've been doing photography for many years, you're probably pretty good, especially if you have a particular talent at it. Mine is sports. You know, I'm not a big sports fan, as I've said here on the show before, but out of everything that I've shot as a photojournalist and for personal work, it seems to be what I do best. Well, according to a recent study, 80% of people who take photos think they're really good at it. In Canon's inaugural 2016 Photography Trends Study, which surveyed 1,004 adults in the United States from April 21st to 26, 2016, we learned that a full 80% rated their own skill in photography as good to excellent, and 62% said that their photography has improved in the past 2 to 5 years. Well, I'd hope so. I mean, that's quite a bit of time to work out the kinks, don't you think? Surprisingly, 64% said that when it came to making prints, they were likely to somewhat likely to do so. Yeah, I said the same thing too. But it hasn't happened in a while. I think mostly because I don't know where I'd put them. It's either going to be the wall or in a shoebox. Wall or shoebox. Right? It's one of the two places. Now, I think it's important to mention, of course, that Canon makes printers. So, of course, they were going to ask that question, huh? But 64%? I don't know. Then again, I recently said here on the show that all of like 2% of people do macro photography, but I did a post over on Twitter, and it turns out about 65% of people do. Who knew? You don't know until you ask, right? Now, as for volume of photos taken, 24% of those surveyed said that they're taking over 300 photos per month. Okay, clearly not soccer moms and dads, because if that were true, you could add a zero or two to that, right? I mean, I hear them slapping away on the shutter on the sidelines. So 300, definitely not those shooting sports. I don't think anyone listening to this is going to be surprised that 59% said that they're taking photos of their pets, with only 57% taking selfies. Again, they surveyed adults here. If it was teens, it would have been 100% taking photos of pets and 100% taking selfies. I mean, the endless need to share photos on Instagram and Snapchat is overwhelming to them. Now, more than half shot their food, and 27% said that they do it so they can brag to their friends. So there's that. I guess everyone wants to see that they can afford a gourmet restaurant or something. I don't know. Now, 1,004 people, of course, isn't a large enough sample size to adequately represent the population at large, but nonetheless, I think it was a fun survey. So 80% think that their photos are awesome, huh? You know, it must be our audience, because y'all know what you're doing out there. I'm constantly blown away by the shots that I see from our audience. Just the other day, longtime listener Skylar Dyer messaged me on Facebook showing me an awesome photo that he got at a high school baseball game. I mean, we're talking portfolio material here. So we have a really talented audience out there, I tell you. Next. One of the worst kept secrets in photography is the yet to be announced Fujifilm X-T2. And the company, as you might imagine, is not at all happy about this. We've seen a mountain of photos of this upcoming camera, and a video which was just posted this week has reportedly caused Fujifilm to go ballistic, and the search is on for the mystery man who shot it. In the rather short video, we see a man peeling what appears to be gaffer tape off a camera body, revealing the X-T2 name beneath it. Now, what's really stupid about this is why would anyone risk their job risk being sued, etc., just to shoot a little video and make it available online. That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I could see if he had a blog or something that could benefit from an influx of traffic by posting this video, but that's also going to draw the lawyers from Fujifilm too. So that's not exactly a great plan. It's like stealing the Hope Diamond and not being able to sell it, because obviously it would prove that you took it or someone else you know took it. Not that you should anyhow, of course, but you guys know what I'm saying here. We learned about this from our friends over at Fuji Rumors and a commenter over there named Sebastian Matthews, who tells the Petapixel Mothership that he has many friends working at Fujifilm, says, quote, "You wouldn't believe, well, actually you probably would, the witch hunt that's been going on this morning. Fuji are looking for any slight detail to narrow down who might be leaking these. It's fun, but a bit annoying. Nobody is saying anything about the X-T2 itself now. The hunt for the leaker is all anyone will talk about. All my sources have dried up because of this hysteria," end quote. Now, whoever leaked the video, in my opinion, has an axe to grind against the company, because I just can't see why anyone else would be motivated enough to risk being caught like this. If they work for the company and they're caught, their career is over. Career, not just their job at Fujifilm. No one in their right mind would ever hire this person again. You don't hire someone you can't trust. Someone whose actions could have a serious economic impact not only on the company, but could put a whole lot of money at risk for its shareholders. You know, there is a reason why companies generally wait until a camera is ready before announcing it. For one, who's going to buy the X-T1 now when you know the X-T2's release is imminent and you know some or all of its features? So then the supply chain starts to back up and the company is forced to unload the current model at a discount just to move some inventory. That hurts the company and its shareholders as well. Once the cat's out of the bag, of course, we have to report on it. Well, I guess we don't have to, but we do. Again, cat no longer in said bag, so you might as well talk about it, right? But you know what? I can't think of an instance when a camera company has ever caught a leaker. I mean, it must have happened. I just don't remember anyone ever talking about it. I guess if you're going to leak a camera, you're going to take some precautions to cover your butt. And in this short video, it doesn't give a whole lot of clues as to who it is. I mean, you can see the guy's hand, you can see the table it's on, and that's just about it. How does Fujifilm even investigate this? Have a look at all their employees' hands? I mean, seriously, what are you going to do here? It could have been an employee, someone at the manufacturing plant, or maybe even a photographer or member of the media who's under an NDA. For those who aren't familiar with that term, an NDA is a non-disclosure agreement. Select entities in the tech world, whether they're reviewers or photographers, are able to get their hands on new gear ahead of its release so they can field test it, make videos, and write reviews that go up the moment the gear is released, etc. And in turn, they must sign an agreement that restricts them from talking about it or showing the gear ahead of that announcement. But I guess every once in a while, someone who's entrusted with that breaks the rules and puts up photos or videos for who knows what reason, because it doesn't benefit them at all, right? Now, the Petapixel Mothership doesn't sign these things, and neither do we here on the podcast. And by we, I mean me, of course. But maybe that'll change in the future, I don't know. But then, of course, I wouldn't be able to talk about these leaks because I'd be under an NDA. And you know what? There's value in not signing an NDA because, as many of you have told me before, you would rather be informed about what may or may not be coming up due to rumors, etc., and wait for a review when it gets posted on Petapixel and elsewhere, then have me do a review and not talk about these things ahead of time. But I'd like to know what more of you guys think out there. Drop me an email at lensshark@gmail.com. Hit me up on Instagram or tweet at me, and I'm at lensshark on Twitter and most everywhere else. You know, this leaked video seems like someone with an axe to grind against Fujifilm, and that company seems to see it that way too. And if they find this guy, he's going to find out just how not worth it was to put out that video. Next. Today's listener question comes from Eric in San Antonio, Texas, who emailed me his question to lensshark@gmail.com. He said, quote, "Hello, Sharky James. I've heard you mention on the podcast and social media that you love Rangefinder magazine. Why? And is it worth it for an amateur photographer to buy a subscription? Thank you." End quote. Thank you so much for your question, Eric. I really appreciate it. All right. First, as you know, Jacqueline Tobin, the editor-in-chief of Rangefinder, whom you've heard on this show before a number of episodes ago do an intro, has stated publicly, and this is on my Facebook wall at facebook.com/lensshark, that they're going to be doing something on me in the show in the near future. So that's really cool. But that doesn't at all influence how I feel about Rangefinder. I've been reading that magazine for at least 9 or 10 years now. It's probably more than that. All right, with that out of the way, here's the reasons why I like Rangefinder magazine, and it's my favorite photo magazine out there. For one, it doesn't cost anything. I mean, photography is expensive enough as it is, right? Like this show, Rangefinder is free and ad-supported. All you have to do is fill out a questionnaire on their website about what you do in the photography business, your position, etc. And then a number of weeks later, I can't remember how many, maybe 3 or 4 or so, you get the magazine. Now, me personally, I'm old school. There's nothing like holding an actual magazine in your hands. It's just not the same as online. But they have that as well. In fact, if I recall correctly, you can choose from a digital subscription, a print subscription, or both. So that's nice. If you go on their website, which is rangefinderonline.com, you'll see the current issue on there. You click on the cover photo, and then you not only have access to that, but you also have years worth of back issues that you can check out as well. But again, I like having the actual issue in my hands. I don't know if it's because maybe I spend enough time on digital devices, my computer, phone, tablet, etc. And sometimes it's just nice to go analog for a bit, right? But what I really enjoy are their articles. They've got tips and tricks complete with lighting diagrams, reports on trends in our industry, Q&A with those who are making their mark, as well as some of the most amazing photographs that you're ever going to see. As I told someone recently, I consider Rangefinder magazine to be so valuable that I actually hang on to every issue. In that photo that I posted on Instagram, you saw a couple of issues from back in 2007. That's nearly a decade ago now. I mean, I think I've had them across 3 or 4 states, and I've been hauling them from place to place. So I think that tells you a lot about what I feel about the magazine. For me, it's a history of our industry that they're documenting. And I'm a former photojournalist, as you know, so I'm kind of partial to print. Maybe that's another reason why I hold on to them. Go to their website, at least thumb through the issues that they have online, and like me, maybe snag the print version, because I think it's totally worth it. Or maybe I'm just old school. I must hate trees or something. Nah, I moved to the city of trees, Boise, Idaho. Next. As we all know, camera drones are a lot of fun, but they can also be quite dangerous and unpredictable. You'll recall that last year, a toddler in the UK lost an eye when the prop from a drone sliced through it when a family friend lost control of the drone. And singer Enrique Iglesias' fingers were cut during a concert when he reached up to grab a hold of a drone, and that sent him to a hospital for care. Well, this time, model and actress Jess Adams was posing atop rocks on a beach in Malibu, California this past weekend when a rather large DJI Inspire 1, the same kind of drone that cut Iglesias, flew right into her head. From the video, it looks like the drone was hovering about 5 or 6 feet or so from her at eye level when it suddenly flew into her. It's hard to tell, but it looks like the prop hit the side of her head first as her head was turned toward the photographer on the beach, and her face got hit by the assembly which was just above the camera. The 6.5-pound drone caused her to be taken to the hospital to be checked out, but thankfully she just had some bruising. Now, imagine if it had taken out an eye or otherwise disfigured her. I mean, she's a model. She's making her living this way. Tell me a jury wouldn't have awarded her a lot of money due to her lost earning potential thanks to a drone injury like that. Again, this is why photographers and videographers need to carry liability insurance. You know, we've heard cases, for instance, of photographers doing senior photo sessions and the team breaks their leg and then they get sued because they're a star track athlete or whatever. When something goes horribly wrong at your shoot, who are they going to blame? That's right, you. So make sure you've got insurance. It's only about $500 or $600 a year, and it's worth it. Build it into your prices. But even if you're doing shoots for free, or this isn't your main gig, you're putting yourself way out there and risking financial ruin, and that's just not good. As for drones, we all know it's just a matter of time before someone gets seriously injured or killed, and then there's going to be public outcry to severely restrict the use of them, and we can't have any nice things, as mom says. The same could go for just about any other item, of course, but with so many people using drones within feet of people so they can get really cool shots, bad things are just going to happen. And of course, we'll tell you about it here on the podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 73 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or like Eric in Texas, you can email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you all do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 74. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.